It's the Pop Medic Podcast for March 25th, 2015, and crime is everywhere. This is the Pop Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mike.
Bale.
Crystal's back.
Yay!
Crystal is back. On this week's episode, Crimes and Heists. Why Crimes and Heists this week, Mike?
Crime will pay.
Score!
I don't know. Oh, right. It's the birthday of Quentin Tarantino. Yay.
That feels a little thin to me. Crime novels and TV shows are perennially popular at the library. So here's some new ones, just to point out a few that are out right now. The Whites by Harry Brandt and Richard Price. The Stranger by Harlan Coben. Maybe that's more of a suspense novel. The Fifth Heart by Dan Simmons. That's Sherlock Holmes in America novel. Inspector of the Dead by David Morrell. That's Thomas DeQuincey solving crimes.
Isn't that movie Focus about con men? That could be kind of a crimey movie, right?
Kind of a crimey movie. If you're more into like steampunk, paranormal romance kind of thing, Gail Carriger has a new series out, The Custard Protocol. You should see some chicks in corsets beat up bad guys.
And Custard.
Then, oh, yeah, Custard. Yeah, we got that book like yesterday. I was like, so it's about a woman who takes a dirigible to India so she can get better tea.
Everybody needs a hobby.
I believe that she has like...
And she has adventures on the way.
I think she has like X-Men powers and like beats up bad guys. And then also Cuba Straits, the latest Doc Ford novel by Randy Wayne White's coming out. So crime is everywhere.
I hope Chris is ready.
Yeah,
oh, that's right. I'm first. Yeah. All right, so I'm going to take this. I'm going to get dark really quickly here, but there is hope, I hope. So most true crime stories sensationalize the criminal, from Ted Bundy to David Berkowitz to Gary Ridgway. We can't help be curious about what could possibly lead someone to commit illegal and violent acts, especially murder. But we mustn't forget to acknowledge and show respect for victims of crime. Now I want to recommend Robert Kolker's book, Lost Girls, An Unsolved American Mystery. Kolker couldn't sensationalize the killer because, as the title declares, this tragic mystery remains unsolved. Now in December of 2010, the bodies of four women were found on a beach in Long Island in New York. In May of 2010, a woman by the name of Shannon Gilbert had disappeared on Long Island after calling 911 for help, and it was later after they had searched for her that the four bodies were found. Now, all of these women were prostitutes who had advertised on the Craigslist and Backpage websites. Kolker shares their stories without judgment, showing great empathy for each of them and the loved ones that mourn their deaths. He brings to light the quirky community of people who live on Long Island, but perhaps most importantly, he slowly builds a case to illustrate the police weren't doing enough to investigate the disappearances of these women because they were prostitutes. It's believed that the Long Island serial killer may have murdered up to 17 people. Shannon Gilbert's remains were found in 2011 in a marsh on Long Island. The police believe she accidentally drowned. Her family believes she's another victim of the killer. Lost Girls, An Unsolved American Mystery is a riveting read and one that certainly has stuck with me, and I highly recommend it.
You weren't kidding, man. That is like hardcore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. Frowny face.
Oh, way to kick off the pop culture podcast.
Wow. Wiping off
the
tears.
Sorry, you all won't want me back for another year.
It's going to take me a year to get over that.
That's right. Yeah. All right, Amanda, bring us up.
Where's Jeremy and his comics and porn?
Next week.
Oh, yeah.
So I am going to bring us back to Happy Land a little bit, and I'm going to talk about something that probably everybody else in the world knows more about than me because I just am new to it. So I'm going to talk about the Kinsey Millhone Alphabet Mystery Series written by Sue Grafton. The first one that she wrote came out in 1982, so these have been around for a way long time, and I only just now, 30 plus years later, finished the first one, because they've been on my list for a while and never really pulled the trigger. Some fun facts are Kinsey Millhone was born, according to Sue Grafton, on May 5th, 1950, which makes her older than my parents. So that's kind of fun. They're set, the whole entire series is set in the 1980s in Santa Teresa, which is a town based on Santa Barbara, California. So even though it's now, whatever year it is, 2015, and we're on W for Wasted was the last one that has just come out last year, it's still in Kinsey's world, it's still the 1980s because Sue Grafton made the decision that Kinsey would only age every 1 year for every 2.5 books that came out. And so she starts at age 32 in the first book, which is called A for Alibi, by the way. Kinsey's parents were killed in a car wreck when she was 5, and then she kind of became the, you know, she'd self-described pot-smoking delinquent when she was in high school. She tried college. That wasn't it for her. She tried, you know, a short stint with the police force. That wasn't for her. So she finally ends up being a private detective. She works for an insurance company that her, you know, aunt worked for a while investigating insurance claims. Eventually she goes out on her own. In the first book, A is for Alibi, she investigates the death of a prominent divorce lawyer. And his wife had actually gone to jail for his murder earlier. But when she gets released, she comes out and has Kinsey look into it. And everything kind of unravels from there. It's funny, interesting fact, Grafton actually admits that she conceived the initial story on her own fantasies of murdering her then husband while going through divorce herself.
Yikes. Oh.
So, way to, you know, that's a good outlet. Good outlet.
I love it.
In the first book, the murder weapon's actually an oleander tablet that that gets put in with the gentleman's allergy medicine. And so then that gives the killer an alibi because who knows how long it will take before, you know, once you put the pill in his box, how long it'll take. So you go, oh, I was nowhere near any of that, officer. So it was a good book. I really enjoyed it. W is for Wasted just came out recently. So 2015 should see the book X is for
what
something.
Will it be for?
Well,
yeah, yeah.
She said
X for
it almost has
Xanadu?
To be. I would read it. That would be awesome. She said it's probably going to be xenophobe or xenophobia because, as she says, she's checked the penal codes in most states and xylophone just isn't a crime. So she's stuck. And so then she has said that 2019 will be the last book and it will be entitled Z is for Zero. And that will coincide with Kinsey's 40th birthday all the way in the year 1990. I think the best part about these books is that I enjoyed going back to the 80s because, you know, that's when I grew up. I was a kid in the 80s and I had the best time imagining all of her leg warmers and stuff that she described a couple outfits that she put on and I was like, that is so 80s.
And if she chooses to stay in the 80s, she can like fetishize that even more and like
yeah,
play
so
that up and it becomes
be interesting
even
to see how we, as we get through B, C, D, E, and so on because I've only done A.
So it sounds like to me too, like she has them all written because I've often wondered because I knew like when I started being a librarian, we were getting close to the end of the alphabet. And mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder if she has this written already.
I think she has more than she's letting on.
Then I was like, you know, is she going to do like double letters next or numbers and stuff?
She claims it's the end.
But I guess it's the end.
Yeah.
No spin-offs.
She's been writing it for 40 years. I think you're good.
Yeah.
So,
for retirement.
Yeah, I thought this would be a little bit more like than the J.D. Robb series, the Naked and Death series, which those are like start in the 90s. But apparently this was before that, and it's going to stay before that. Liked it. Excellent series. Feel free to check out the 9 million books in that series, should you so decide. Okay, I don't know who's going next, because
Bill.
Mike and Bill are.
And Mike's going to go next?
Yeah.
All right.
We decided
They're
to go chronologically. Yeah, and a Pop Medic first. Me and Bill are like doing stuff that link together. Very exciting. Now we go from the world of slap bracelets and totally tubularness to back to Dark Town. Oh, boy.
It's a brief shining moment.
Heists and murder and, you know, car chases. Let's see. For many prolific authors, you know, our agents and publishers advise them to use multiple pseudonyms if they wish to write many genres. Mystery writer Donald Westlake had quite a few. The dearly departed Jeremy may be interested to know. Should he listen to this? Westlake.
From Beyond the Grave.
That's right. I always like to pretend if they're not there, then they're dead, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Crystal came back, you know, but she looks good for a zombie.
Right.
She's alive. This is
right
touching all flames
off,
of my tickle, my fancy, and everything.
Very exciting. Oh, Westlake had a few pseudonyms devoted to porn. Eh, But my favorite of his writing personas is also his most famous, Richard Stark, the name he used exclusively for the Parker crime series. Parker is kind of like this badass thief dude who was in a series of novels starting in 1962 with The Hunter, but his retell Payback to tie in with the Mel Gibson movie, which I haven't seen. What do you think, Bill? I'm sure you've seen it.
I don't know.
I heard it's meh. That's why I didn't like seek it out.
Yeah. it's just sort of so-so. Like, yeah. You know, Lee Marvin was the best.
Yeah.
Point blank. Yeah. He was Parker all the way.
I also like the outfit with...
And Duvall. That's true. That's a good one, too.
But no, we're cutting ahead. In the Hunter / Payback, Parker is betrayed by his wife and criminal associates and left for dead. So he spends the rest of the book seeking revenge. Ooh. But subsequent novels generally follow the same kind of like heist framework. Like a civilian or like a potential thief gets in touch with Parker through back channels, usually like a guy named Handy McKay, which is a great name. Parker and a group of thieves usually... They all have really cool jobs like the wheelman, who's like a driver, or the jugger, who's like a safecracker, or like the muscle, who's a muscle. See what the planner has planned, and if they agree, that they all agree, they'll go on like the heist together, but like different members can disagree and that kind of thing. And what I really like about it is that, you know, anything can go wrong at any time. I mean, Parker can like go up there with like the plan and be like, this isn't going to work, I'm out of here. And then usually the other thieves will either be like, you know, but you got to join, gun, you know, whip out a gun. Or like, you know, fine, whatever. And then like, you know, the job will like will somehow like, you know, interact with them later. You know, there have been books where like, you know, Parker gets shot and has to like, you know, get away, or like the job like, you know, doesn't work. Or the job works really, really well. And, you know, he takes like a year off. Woohoo. Another thing I really enjoy about the series, it apparently takes place in a parallel universe where there's like an underground network of criminals with an honor code. You know, it kind of reminds me of like these PvP video games where like everybody's really polite and careful with each other because, you know, you can like, you anger somebody. You can, you know, whip out guns and shoot you. It's not a good idea to cross Parker, as he and his friends will not stop unless they either get their money or kill you, or preferably get their money and kill you.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, you know. The cleanest way to do it.
Yeah, Parker's not a member of, like, you know, the mafia, but, you know, in fact, there's a couple of books where he declares war on the outfit or the organization. You know, they never call it the mafia. I guess Westlake didn't want to, like, anger or something.
Did you want to?
You know, I thought it was, like, goofy. Of course, you know, back before, like, The Godfather, like the mafia didn't really consider them, like, you know, a lot of, like, the honor codes, and The Godfather didn't incorporate it until after the movie came out. Where am I? Oh, Stark's books have been adapted to a number of movies, which we just talked about. What we did mention is that there's a movie that's at the Southeast Lending Machine called Made in USA, which is a French New Wave version of The Jugger, which is, one of the books, but I have not seen it, but I don't have a really good feeling that it's going to be any good, because I hated Breathless. I'm sure, you know, Brian loved it and, you know, has the poster in his room, but 2 hours of people just chatting for nothing.
I don't want to
nothing at all.
I don't want to bring it down.
Don't bring me down!
Oh! Not the biggest Godard fan, but...
It's also been adapted to a series of graphic novels by Darwin Cook, which we have a few of, like The Score. They're critically acclaimed, and it's the only adaptation of Parker that Westlake approved of in his lifetime. That he actually approved the Parker name, which he didn't approve of for any of the movies, which I thought was pretty neat. Hey, what do you have, Bill?
Well, ooh, interesting. Exciting. Once upon a time, there was a writer named Donald E. Westlake.
What?
Who wrote a hard-boiled crime fiction under the name of Richard Stark.
What?
Mr. Westlake stated, I was wearing my Richard Stark hat, looking to tell a story about my man Parker, and I thought, he reacts badly to frustration. What if he had to steal the same thing 4 or 5 times? When Mr. Westlake started to work on the story, he thought, Parker would not stand for this. However, thankfully...
Bullets would start flying.
Yeah. Thankfully, Westlake loved the idea, and the character John Dortmunder was born. Westlake came up with the name Dortmunder after going into a bar and seeing Dortmunder beer. He said, that's what I want, an action hero with something wrong with him. And John Dortmunder was born. Also was born was the crime comic novel. The first novel featured John Dortmunder was The Hot Rock, and according to the Crown Crime Companion, the top 100 mystery novels of all time, which we have in our collection, The Hot Rock comes in at number 38.
Completely respectable.
Completely. John Dortmunder and his motley gang steal a sacred jewel from the Brooklyn Museum, and nutty hijinks ensue. In another Dortmunder adventure, which the library has, the bank job, he robs a bank. I mean, he literally steals the entire bone. And don't ask, he steals a thigh bone. In bad news, he steals 2 70-year-old dead Indians. And in good behavior, he steals a nun. If you're depressed, may I recommend a Donald E. Westlake, John Dortmunder taper adventure to help you with the blues. And remember, Afghanistan, banana stand. You'll have to read the Hot Rock to see what that
is. I know what that means. I read that last week. Oh, boy. It's really funny, you guys. You should totally check it out.
2 thumbs up, then.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best adaptation of the Dortmunder books that they did was of the Hot Rock with Robert Redford.
Yeah.
I dig it. I think I may have talked about this book in the past, years ago, but I think I just mentioned it on Tickle My Fancy, but that's Nobody Move by Dennis Johnson. And I'm just going to read the blurb from the publisher. Nobody Move is the story of an assortment of lowlifes in Bakersfield, California, and their cat-and-mouse game over $2.3 million. Touched by echoes of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett, Nobody Move is at once a homage to and variation on literary form. It salutes one of our most enduring and popular genres, the American crime novel, but with a grisly humor and outrageousness that are Dennis Johnson's own, sexy, suspenseful, and above all entertaining, Nobody Move shows one of our greatest novelists at his versatile best. And I couldn't have said it better myself. For once, the actual blurb is actually true to what it's like. And I'll just give you the setup. I'll just try to ape Bill and do what Bill does. I'll just give you the setup. It's all you need to know. Jimmy Luntz is a down-and-out compulsive gambler. So when the loan shark sends the enforcer to hurt him, what he decides to do is wrestle the loan shark's gun away, shoot the loan shark in the knee, and then flee. So that's the setup. That's all you need to know. It's great. It's a shame that Jeremy isn't here because he had mentioned to me, it's always stuck with him that I said on one episode 5 years ago that Marilynne Robinson is the best prose writer alive, and of all the pretentious, snobby diarrhea that's ever come out of my mouth, right? You remember that? Or why I said that, right? I was like, well, guess what? Dennis Johnson is the best prose writer alive. And even his quote-unquote serious literary novels are all about down-and-out losers committing crimes in one way or another. And this is amazing. If you're into that kind of thing, I think that you would like it. And I'm going to recommend the audio. I read it on audio. It was read by Will Patent, who is my favorite audiobook reader.
Best narrator, Jay, right?
My favorite, audiobook reader.
Okay, if I smoke? Sure. In your car, but not in my car.
Will Patent also does most of the James Lee Burke. I don't know that. What's the James Lee Burke series that's really popular?
Robichaux or whatever.
Yeah, Dave Robichaux. Yeah.
Will Patent reads all those too. So check that out. In the words of Dr. Steve Brule. All right. What's tickling our fancy this week? It's something sad, just like the way we started
not
the
much
other
of
segment.
We're
a cheery podcast. Debbie Downer.
I swear.
Pop-Matic Bummercast.
Swear we're getting better at this. The more we do it.
It will end strong. We promise.
Awesome.
I start with a frowny face, where I was very sad to learn last week at the passing of fantasy writer Terry Pratchett. While he wasn't the first author I got into, I remember as a child, and the joy and wonder of discovering his works for the first time. I borrowed my dad's copies, read one a week for most of a year in middle school. It was very cool. Not only were they very funny, but they're also very, remarkably clever, poking fun at both, fantasy tropes and certain peculiarities of modern life. His Discworld series began in 1983 with The Color of Magic, which was a direct parody of the sword and sorcery genre, like Fritz Leiber's Fafhrd and the Grey Mauser, as well as Conan the Barbarian show up, with different names. Eventually, the series would broaden and parody and comment on issues from real life, concepts from our world, like movies or rock and roll or computers or, would infiltrate the Discworld. And the characters would react to them with hilarious results. or they'd introduce fancy tropes that hadn't been introduced before, like zombies or golems or that kind of thing. My favorite book is probably Reaper Man, where Death gets fired and tries to take up a new career as a farmer.
Might not have been my first choice as death, but sure.
It's pretty funny. He, like, on the cover, he wears, like, overalls and has, like, the stalk of wheat in his,
like
jaw.
Like American Gothic painting?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, the hat, you know.
Gothic,
it's like
American
a skull.
Gothic.
Yeah. I read Busted the Knob one today when I was a little kid, sitting in an old rocking chair in the same room as my dad, who was playing a video game. So I, like, tell him all the funny bits, and we both laugh together. Oh. Death was my favorite character in the series, as he didn't really understand, like, living people. It's like he finds them, like, interesting and, like, oh, that's kind of neat, which is always kind of funny to me. Pratchett was one of the best-selling authors in British history, like, just behind J.K. Rowling, and was awarded a knighthood in 2009. He forged his own sword, which had, like, meteor material in it.
Nice.
It was, like, really cool. Like, it looks like it's made of silver and stuff. He, like, made his own coat of arms that had an Ankh in it, attributed to Ankh-Morpork. But in, 2007, he was diagnosed with a form of early-onset Alzheimer's, which would eventually claim his life. Really sad. Anyway. So what have you got, Crystal?
Do you need a hug?
Frowny face.
Well, now for something completely different. Tickling my fancy is the first half of season one of Outlander, which the library currently owns on DVD. If you're a fan of Diana Gabaldon's books, fear not. It's perfectly cast, and it certainly honors her saga. And if you enjoy the 60 bits of romance novels but long for well-rounded characters and better stories, Outlander is for you.
I once made the mistake of making fun of Outlander to Susan downstairs. I thought she would
would
cut me.
You are lucky,
like,
you are here.
Like, seriously, yeah, I, wow. You know, the scars have never quite healed.
Yes. Yes,
yes. Uber fan would apply to her. Yes.
Indeed. All right, Brian.
Well, do we know how Susan feels about the Outlander TV
show?
She
likes it. Oh, I don't know about the TV show. Yeah.
She likes it. She thinks it's cool. She especially loves the wedding dress, apparently, was in some episode.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, she brought me over so I could see the wedding dress. And I was like, well, that seems pretty nice.
You're such a boy.
Good answer.
That's pretty. Okay.
I guess. Walk back to desk.
I was just going to say that if I read a romance novel, I want the sexy bits and not necessarily the character development.
The
but that's, I'd watch that show. I mean, I'd still watch that show for sure. I was going to talk about a crime series set in the British Isles. Guess where it's set?
Wales.
Wales?
Oh, wow. You guessed
it. I'm psychic.
Yeah.
No way.
So this was recommended to me by Carol, who works here, and she knew that I'd be into it because it's set in Wales. It's contemporary. It's called Hinterland.
I love Hinterland.
And I gotta be honest, the thing that I most like about it is that it's set in Wales. And there's Welsh words, but if you're into the crime, and Crystal is, that's why I let her go first, even though she was talking about something horrific and totally a downer.
I'm still upset. Can't deny it.
But you have this, tortured detective finding dead people out in rural Wales and Aberystwyth and solving the crimes. And I think maybe, I don't know how this is shot, but it's like, they're just doing something with digital cameras now. It's like, just like all the colors are like ultra saturated, but it's still like dark. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if, I'm sure there's some technical thing. If Clint was here, he could say, maybe Bill knows, but it's shot that way. It looks, well, that's the other thing I do like about it. It looks amazing. Like, I don't know if the storylines hold up to how awesome the show looks.
This is a TV show?
This is a TV show.
It's a book.
Is it a book series that turned into a TV show, or is it, like, just a TV show?
I believe it's just a TV show.
Okay.
It's actually produced by Channel 4, which is the Welsh language, BBC Welsh language channel. And even though it's tickling my fancy, and I've been watching it and enjoying it, I'm actually, like, fancy detickled or whatever.
It's the opposite of a tickle, like a pinch.
I know. It's the opposite of a tickle, right? Or, like, a prickle. I'm being prickled by the fact that...
I had to really hold my tongue in this one.
It was actually produced in Welsh under the title, I'm going to try, guys.
Oh, boy.
The Gwyth.
Which is Welsh for the dusk. And then they changed the title to Hinterland, which I'll get to that a little bit later. But I just really want to see, like, the version in Welsh. I'd have to have English subtitles, but it'd be just so great to see. But if you want to get it, you got to buy it from the UK when a Region 2 DVD. So, like, even on the DVDs that were released in America that the library has, like, it's just the English version. I was like, you can't even put, like, a Welsh dub track on there. And what I can't figure out is, like, it looks like they just, like, they actually shot them both.
I think they did. They filmed in Welsh and then they filmed in English.
Which is, like, a waste of taxpayer money, UK.
I was going to say, it's not your tax dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it does look really cool, but I do think it suffers somewhat of, like, doing this Welsh thing where it's always just, like, the tragedy of Wales or something, or, like, they're always looking for the past. It's always about the past. It's all about ghosts and how things in Wales want to stay the same, but they're dragged into the future. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I just see a lot of, there's a lot of Welshness there, and I don't necessarily serve the good aspects of Welsh culture, even though I think it's supposed to be a celebration. It's a very, very Welsh show. And it's interesting, too. Carol had said to me, she's like, you know, the Wales that's in this wasn't really, you know, what I thought of as Wales. So when I watched it, I was like, that is the Wales that I know, man. This is so Welsh, it hurts. And I enjoyed it. Hinterland and the crime aficionado in the group, Crystal, you like it.
Yeah, I've only seen one episode, but I loved it. Yeah.
Cool. So if you're listening to this, because
where is it on?
Like, I watched it on Netflix, but the library does have it.
Yeah, right. We have, like, so far there's been, like, the first series was 4 episodes, but they're actually 90 minutes long.
And
so
yeah, it's like
very Sherlock.
Yeah, it's like a movie. It's like each one is like a movie. There's been one other episode that's broadcast on the BBC. They did like a New Year's Day special, but it's like a movie. It's like 90 minutes. That I don't think you can get that in the States yet, at least on DVD. So, Hinterland. You like Wales. You like crime. You like
detective. Charlotte Church.
Yeah, you like 12-letter words without vowels.
Yeah.
And sometimes Naomi Watts was on Jimmy Kimmel a couple weeks ago. I guess she was born in Wales, or her family is from there, and so she pronounced the town.
Oh, no.
And
then
Jimmy Kimmel had it up on the screen behind her. It was incredible.
And can you pronounce the name of the town?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the big barrier for me to learn anything Welsh. Is how do you pronounce half of what the words are?
Well, they use Roman alphabet, so it's not that hard.
Does you?
Just saying.
So who's going first of the zombie twins?
I think Bill's going to go first because he started the fun.
You know what? So. I have to apologize because I was sort of winding down because I'm so used to going last.
Oh, and there's more.
We have so much Tickle My Fancy left that my
bonus content.
That my prickle has been... Unprickled.
Unpickled?
I don't know what that means.
Must. Cold mouth.
So which one of you guys wants to go first?
I want Bill to go first because he's the one that made me watch it. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. You held a gun to your head.
He did.
Start.
Okay. Yeah. You don't need my permission. This show is off the rails.
Like, we both. As per usual.
Two people talking about the same thing.
Did two
twice.
I guess that's okay. On other shows, we would all talk about the one thing. We'd be like, iZombie. It's the iZombie episode.
That's right.
I think he just stole your thunder.
Wait, it's not?
That's all right. Well, Tickling My Fancy is a television show called iZombie, based on the Vertigo comic series by writer Chris Roberson and Michael Allred. Where's Jeremy when we need him?
Seriously? Yeah, I know. I was about to say, like, if you come in here and...
The television show was developed by Rob Thomas and Diane Ruggiero. I believe that's how her name's pronounced. Forgive me if not. The series deals with a medical resident, Olivia Livmore, who attends a party one night, and there's a zombie outbreak on the boat, and she becomes a brain-eating zombie. Now, you have to watch it. I won't go into the great detail. And she's able to help solve crimes with this ability. When she eats brains, she feels the who's murdered them, and she sees visions of the people. So she helps, and she works in a morgue because that's where the brains are.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that
makes perfect sense to me.
My name is Liv. I used to be passionate, inspired, alive. Now I'm mostly just hungry and a zombie, so there's that. As day jobs go, this one was pretty grim. Until I got a taste of something more.
Why the hot sauce? Is that a zombie thing?
It's finally here.
I've been terrified about somebody finding out about me for months, and you're acting like it's the measles. When I eat a brain, I get visions. Flashes of dreams or memories.
Dr. Death, what's the story with Ma Jane Doe? No idea yet?
She was arrested in 2008.
How'd you know that?
Liv, it's a psychic.
Ish. I can't refuse to be dead. I can't tell the people I love what's going on with me. But I can choose to help find justice.
Calling out, you're my alibi.
saw you get shot.
He missed. I played dead, and then I guess I chased his car. Seriously, how did you solve crime before me? I thought I was the only one.
Until like 3 seconds ago, so did I.
So if you watch it, it's a lot of fun. It's a comedy, drama, crime-solving show. The pilot episode, like I said, was a lot of fun. I know this is a show that I'm going to watch. So it stars Rose McGyver. It airs on the CW at 8 p.m. Central Time Tuesday nights. And also, and you can watch the pilot episode online. So I highly recommend iZombie. So Amanda.
I was innocently sitting in my office yesterday processing books, and Bill comes in and goes, I have to talk to you. And I said, okay. So he's like, you have to watch this new show. He's like, it's by the Rob Thomas is the guy that does Veronica Mars, which longtime listeners know I talk about Veronica Mars every other week. So he's like, but it's like a zombie, but I think you'll be okay because, like, she's going to solve crimes. Like, it's not going to be scary because I don't do scary either. So I'm like, okay. So I did sit down and watch it, and I enjoyed it. I'm with Bill. I think it's funny. It's very well written, as everything Rob Thomas does is. For me, it was kind of like the I don't know if you ever saw that TV show Dead Like Me. Like, take that show and then take Psych. And then, like, wrap it all up in the big Veronica Mars wrapper, and that's kind of what this show is. So I liked all three of those things. But I did think that the main character looks like Veronica Mars. Like, she has the bleached hair. I mean, she's a little bit more zombie-esque. But it's not scary at all. It's funny. It's very smart. And the library actually has the comics.
We have the zombie. I've cataloged the comics.
Yeah, so we don't have a lot of copies, but if you did want to, there's four of, there were 28 issues. There's four of, they put them in four different graphic novels. And these were back, this ended back in 2012. So fairly recent. I don't know if Jeremy would consider that.
We just got the last trade relatively recently. And
okay.
I looked at the end to see how it ends, and it's one of the weirdest endings I've ever
but
seen.
Don't spoil it. La, la, la.
I'm just saying. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm saying it was very odd.
But yeah, so if you need and I'm very leery about TV shows because I feel like I'm going to watch two episodes and fall in love with it, and then they're going to yank it out from underneath me.
Yep.
They're going to firefly me all over
again. Do you have a club that I can join? Yeah.
So, but I did risk it, and it's worth it, and I will watch this for as long as it is on the TV.
So, and also, it's going to be a guaranteed 13.
Yeah, so it looked like on IMDb they did 12 episodes.
Yeah, 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to get the full 12, so we'll just have to wait and see how it goes from there.
Yeah, so good times.
Does it have a cool theme song like Veronica?
It does have a cool theme, but it's got, like, the comic book guys, like, draw, like, the intro, like, the transitions.
Yeah.
Like, it flashes
cool.
to comic book and then comes back to, like, the real. So that was really cool. So at the time, I knew it was a comic book, like, right away, because it's like, oh, look, comic book, and then.
It was hip. Done, you know.
Yeah,
it's
it
a complicated.
Smart.
It was a lot of information in 1 hour last
yeah,
night.
Yeah,
and I mean, they did it really. Oh yeah, this makes sense. And
it finally got
ludicrous
there.
Story.
Yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh. I did not like the guy they cast as the cop.
Uh-huh.
Like, he was my least favorite actor. Like, I don't know, he just rubbed me the
I
wrong
can say
way,
that,
but
we'll just have to. Maybe he'll grow
yeah,
on.
But
you.
Her,
maybe she'll eat his brains later.
But her ex-fiance was really cute, so it kind of made up for it. And I like her part, the other guy that works in the morgue with her, liked him. He was cool,
and
too.
And her roommate's cute, too. So watch out, Zombie. Oh.
Mike, I never asked you to explain what Smarch was.
Oh, there's a Simpsons Halloween episode where Willy becomes Freddy Krueger. And at the very beginning, it happens in the 13th month, the 13th hour of the 13th month of the 13th year, 13 years ago. And they walk up to a calendar, and a misprinted calendar, and it's Smarch. And Homer goes, damn, Smarch weather.
And
nice baby laugh.
And this is a beloved Simpsons in-joke,
yes.
I think, amongst a Simpson fandom. And so much so that Jeremy actually created a display here at the library called, like, awesome. Beware of the Ides of Smarch or something. And it's Smarch. It's a picture of Homer and the calendar misspelled wrong. So that was a nod to that. And I said that we were going to explain what it was, and we never did.
Yeah.
just because of the magic of editing, Jeremy started talking about my relationship with Toy Story, but it was never really introduced. That might have been a little bit confusing.
I thought that was weird, but yeah. I thought maybe I just missed it.
No. I just remember you not liking it because you are a curmudgeon who hates things.
We can leave it at that. That's all good. And that's all the corrections, unless we have more.
Caveat emptor, listeners.
For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week, the funny episode.
Funny, funny, or like?
Funny, haha.
Yeah.
I think funny, haha.
Funny,
Yeah, it was funny. That's it.
Funny, ew.
Does this clown taste funny to you?
Runs like a Welshman, doesn't he? Doesn't he run like a Welshman?